Apoorv, could you tell me a little bit about carbon upcycling technologies? When did you establish your company?
Sure, Taro. We started the company about 2.5 years ago, probably 4 or 5 months prior to the CCMC Grand Challenge call for expressions of interest going out. And really what the company is about is using novel methods to sequester CO2 into solid form. So essentially what we do is we take CO2 gas in a pressurized form, put it through a reactor, mix it in with some solid carbon, and create a nanoparticle at the end that can be used as a filler in different industries.
Now, I understand that you're actually working with the CO2 to convert graphite to graphene. Can you explain that process to me?
Yes, so it is an interesting process in the sense that it takes a low-value product like CO2 and low-grade carbon, really, like coal and pet coke and fly ash and things. And very much like you said, what happens in our reactor is the CO2 gas actually punctures holes through the carbon, and it activates the carbon as well. It creates a very volatile environment where the surface area of the carbon gets exposed. If you think of a high-rise building and just imagine puncturing holes through it, that's literally what happens. If you look at every floor of a skyscraper as a layer of carbon stacked upon each other, the CO2 gas punctures holes through that building, creates a lot of surface area. And in this instance, it's a good thing. I mean, the analogy I'm using maybe is not so positive, but the high surface area creates a lot of functional attributes that are chemically very promising. And at the end of it, we also get that CO2 bonding to the surface of that solid carbon. So the process not only creates this high surface area nanoparticle, which in some cases can be single layer, which would be then considered graphene, but can also have carboxyl groups on it, which is a CO2 group on the side. And that means that overall, when you look at the whole energy balance around our process, we capture more CO2 than we use up in energy. So it is a carbon negative process in essence.
And the final product, what can you actually use it for?
That has been probably the focus of our R&D over the last 9 to 12 months. Is we had an initial inkling that just based on the characteristics we're expecting, that it would be excellent for polymers and concrete and coatings. And we've since started very elaborate testing programs with a few universities across Canada to verify these assumptions. And the 4 testing programs that we have ongoing very actively are in coatings, where we're using the University of Calgary and a third-party coating lab up here in the northeast of Calgary. We've got some concrete testing going on with UBC, some polymer testing with University of Toronto, and then we're doing some asphalt-related testing with Carleton University in Ottawa. But to answer your questions on what this product actually does, it really depends on what we're mixing it with. So, for example, in concrete, what we found is that surface area that we're creating, like in the analogy of a sponge, the cement as it's curing actually goes into these hollow spots and adheres a lot better. It actually gives it spots where it can bind and create a much stronger bond. So concrete, with the use of our filler, gets a bit stronger in terms of the overall strength of the concrete. Interestingly, we also found that it has higher durability. It's more resistant to corrosion, like chlorides and things of that sort. In terms of coatings, we've seen a few different benefits, such as a reduction in the friction coefficient, because graphite or graphene are both solid lubricants. They've also increased the thermal performance of the coating, so it survives higher temperatures slightly better. And in terms of polymers, we've seen that as these polymers cross-link in an extrusion gun, the presence of our carbon, again, just gives them a much stronger finish. So you'll get a higher impact strength, a higher thermal conductivity, as well as higher electrical performance as well.
I find this quite interesting as well, that through this process that you're developing, you're venturing into the whole field of nanotechnology.
Absolutely, and that was definitely one of our intents. I think it'd be fair to say that the two overall visions we have with this company are, one is to create functional materials, which is more the front end of things. But secondly, we also want to make sure that the process that we use has the ability to scale up on an economically feasible manner. So we don't want to take high energy intensive or very high, I guess, finicky equipment requirements with our process. We want to make sure that the nanoparticles that we're producing are of high quality and are created in a low energy system or a reactor. But at the end of the day, it needs to have some functionality for our end products as well.
So where would you get your CO2 from?
That's a very good question. And I think the answer is always evolving. When we started with the proof of concept for this process about 2 years ago, we stuck to a very pure grade of CO2, which was at that 99% purity level. It's still not lab-grade purity, but it's somewhere between industrial and lab-grade specs. And at that point, what we're envisioning is we wanted to make sure that the system that we have, the reactor, is modular and can be scaled down so that it has portability and modularity. From that perspective, what we envisioned is that for processes like a methanol plant, for example, which already create a pretty high grade of CO2, we could easily just put in a 5-ton-an-hour system, plug it in on the back end next to the CO2 exhaust, and you'd be producing not only your initial revenue-generating product, like methanol, for example, but also now this new grade of nanoplatelets or graphene. Having said that, we've also started testing just recently here in the last couple of weeks where we've taken gas compositions or gas blends that mimic what you would get out of combustion of natural gas or coal. And the intent there is to see that if we can plug that right into our process as it stands and still get CO2 uptake, meaning absorption of CO2, then at that point we might not need any pre-processing. We've also been in touch with a couple of institutes that have commercial membranes that can get CO2 concentrations up from 12% to 30 or 40%. So we've tried to cover all our bases there to an extent, but really the best scenario for us, Cheryl, would be that we plug in exactly what you get out of a coal combustion plant and we still get really good CO2 uptake numbers, and we'll have a good idea on where that stands in about 3 months' time.
So when you look at the commercialization continuum, whereabouts would you be on that line, that continuum? What stage are you at?
I would tend to estimate that we're at that TRL 5 kind of stage, because we've gotten to a stage where we've optimized the production process and understand it quite intimately. The real unknowns now are, does it work for the markets that we're targeting? So in terms of concrete and polymers, for example, we've got two specific testing programs going where an end user already active in that industry is kind of being our champion. And they're working with us as well as the Associated University to see if it would fit their needs. I think one of the big value propositions that we offer is usually nanoparticle production costs are hundreds of dollars a kilo. And we're coming down and kind of changing that perception to saying you can create this for less than $10 a kilo, potentially even less than $2, $3 a kilo. And that's really where we're ruffling a few feathers, I guess, and getting a few people interested where otherwise they'd be cautious of trying something new. To give you a specific example of what we're doing, we're working with a company out of Manitoba, which works in the agri-chem industry. They make water bottles specifically to carry 10 liters of fluids, usually water, around for the farmers. And they're currently testing our carbon filler in their HTP bottles to see if they can somehow reduce their cost and reduce the wall thickness of those bottles. That testing is currently ongoing at the University of Toronto. And if that goes well for us, then there is immediate commercial opportunities that could arise from that. And we have a similar kind of program going with a couple of concrete guys as well.
That sounds really encouraging.
It's definitely a little more positive than we're expecting to be, to be very honest with you. I think the kind of traction that we've been getting has been relatively organic. I mean, we haven't really gone out and created a marketing program just yet to reach out to potential customers. But the fact that we've already got two or three interested parties is very encouraging, absolutely.
So what has it meant to you and your company to be a recipient of the CCEMC's Grand Challenge?
In complete honesty, Cheryl, I don't think we would have been able to move nearly as fast as we have without that kind of support. And I think there has been two aspects to it. There's definitely the financial aspect, which has helped us move things along and do things more efficiently and quickly. But I think the overall coverage that we've gotten from this has also been tremendous. I mean, you know, we were last year presenting our technology all around the U.S. I mean, we're in Philadelphia, in Denver, in New York, in San Fran. About a couple of months ago, I was down in Houston to present at the Rice Alliance Clean Tech Forum. We're the only Canadian company presenting at that event. And that's not an uncommon occurrence. Like, usually we are one of the few Canadian companies that gets this kind of response. And partly, I think it's because of the fact that, you know, out of 350 applicants worldwide, we were one of the few that were granted that money a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago. And I definitely think that it's carried quite a bit of weight in helping us create a brand around the kind of work we're doing.
Apoorv, thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.